Well, tonight on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk about evoking eternity. We're going to be talking about the occult. Get ready on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. E.A. Coetting has invested over a dozen years studying the mysteries of the occult and their practical applications, and has spent the last decade teaching and guiding others in their ascent. Coetting is the author of several books on the esoteric and has, over the past few years, risen as a leader of the practical spirituality movement, and he's on Coast to Coast. Hello, EA. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, George?
Good. Good to have you with us. First time, I believe, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, we've had so many guests on. Sometimes we don't know who's been on and who hasn't, so it's good to have you. Tell me a little bit more about yourself beyond just the bio.
Well, you know, I guess I would consider myself a spiritual adventurer, where I've always had this obsession with spirituality, and not just in a feel-good way or you know, let's think about God and heaven type of way, but more in a how does this work type of way. I've looked my entire life at the prophets and the messiahs that have been here on this earth and the spiritual masters, and even when I was a kid, my obsession was to ask myself how they were able to perform the miracles that they were able to perform, and how they were able to tap into that divine knowledge and wisdom, and that really developed into searching after a method, so that led me into just about every religion and spiritual path out there to find that method that could be reproducible and that could actually produce verifiable result, I think I found a good deal of that in the occult, in ritual magic, where you perform these actions that have spiritual connections, and then you see a result in the world around you that is 100% verifiable.
When people hear the word occult, EA, they think it's evil. They think there's something wrong. They think it's satanic. What do you tell them? How do you correct them?
Well, you know, the word occult as well as the word esoteric both mean hidden and secret, and so that'll automatically evoke in your mind the idea that it's hidden for a reason and it's secret. It's secret to the elite and to those that might want to keep things from the public, and that's not necessarily the case. The occult, these secrets. Are basically, if you look at just about every spiritual path out there, every religion out there, they do talk about the secrets of godhood and the secret knowledge, and that's really what the occult is about. It's tapping into that secret knowledge that really takes us beyond just being bipedal mammals into our own actually godhood.
Tell me a little bit about the word evocation and how that fits into all this.
Well, you know, evocation is the act of calling before you a spirit or entity from another plane of existence, from a more subtle plane. So what you're able to do with a ritual of evocation is you perform the ritual and once again, this is a reproducible method that will bring any spirit or any entity from outside of our normal sensory range into our sensory range, where you can see it, you can hear it. At times, you can reach out and touch the spirit. All of your senses can come in contact with something that's not of this world.
Now, is this evocation, is it done through rituals and, you know, special, you know, mystic acts?
Yeah, yes, it really is. There seems to be certain combinations that unlock both the internal world, where you can unlock your inner faculties, such as your clairvoyance and clairaudience, where you can communicate with things of spiritual nature. It also, these rituals will unlock part of your environment, so your environment can actually house these spirits that are coming through.
All right, let's get into a little bit broader explanation of this whole thing. how do people generally call these spirits up, and why would they want to do this anyway?
Okay, yeah, the method out there, if you pick up a grimoire, which a grimoire is going to be a book that details the spirits, their attributes, and their symbols. And in these grimoires, such as the Key of Solomon and the Black Pulit, or a few, the rituals are given there, where you're basically drawing these circles around you with really ornate symbols in them, and then you're praying in the name of Jesus to bring this spirit forth. And what I found is that those rituals, as given in those grimoires, don't really work. It's almost like they were put in there as a type of a blind for people who aren't initiated into the secrets of occultism, to kind of lead them on a goose chase. So the actual method would be, you know, before you referenced both ritual and mysticism. And it's really a connection between both of them, where you're accessing internal shifts of consciousness, as well as shifts, like I said, in your environment, and the two combined is really what brings you into contact with these spirits.
EA, would you use a Ouija board to do this?
No. I actually do get into that in Evoking Eternity, where you don't really need a third medium to communicate with these spirits, because you're going to be bringing them fully before you, where you can see them, you can hear them, you can often smell them. There'll be shifts in the temperature in the room, other physical phenomenon that's extremely observable to just about anybody. So you don't need to get an Ouija board. You don't need to get pendulums out. You're going to be face to face with the spirit that you've called on.
Who are these spirits, EA?
You know, that's something that's I think even highly debated within occult circles is who are they, and especially when you get into talking about demons versus angels and whatnot. Really, if you open up your spiritual sight and look around you, our world is cluttered with spirits. Our world is overlapped with the world of spirits, and so, you know, what they're all doing there and what their purpose is, it really depends on what types of spirits you're talking about. And there are much more than just, you know, angels and demons. You've got spirits that belong to each zodiacal sign, to each planet, and even aspects of our environment, aspects of our nature. So the spirits are basically intelligence and energy that's become embodied.
Is this something that you have performed yourself, conjuring up these spirits?
Yes, probably hundreds, if not thousands of times.
How long does it generally take? And then how do you know you're successful?
It'll usually take, the ritual itself will take 15 to 30 minutes to perform for me. And I've been doing it long enough that I can trigger the necessary internal states and environmental states pretty quickly. How do I know that it's successful is when I'm looking in the face of the spirit that I've called. I don't think that anything else would really be considered successful for me. A lot of people, when they start playing with this, and you do have a lot of dabblers that'll try it out, and they might get a spooky feeling. They might get a I felt that like there was something here. Well, for me, that's not good enough. That's not evidence. I want to see the face of the spirit. I want to see the shift between the worlds and really behold the spiritual in front of me.
Isn't dabbling with this somewhat dangerous if they don't know what they're doing?
It most definitely is. It most definitely is. And this isn't something to take on lightly, to just for fun, this is the entire occult scene is something I would consider extremely dangerous, but also extremely profitable in a lot of different ways. So yeah, there are dangers. I think one of the greatest dangers is that that you're putting your mind, your awareness, your emotions, and your spiritual being into direct contact with something that is completely external to you, and something that's often much, much older and more powerful than you are.
Is there a possibility that you will, through this danger, conjure up a spirit that you might not have wanted here?
Yes, yes. There is the possibility of not necessarily calling up a spirit that you didn't intend to call, but more underestimating what you're calling up. You know, you look in these grimoires, and it's easy to look at that and go, oh, okay, this is you know, this is something I can do. It'll be fun. It'll be spooky. But you are calling on something extremely ancient and extremely powerful.
EA, just for a moment, and I know you said it takes 15 minutes, so I don't want you to go through the whole ritual, but can you give me just a general idea of what it's like when you start to try to evoke a spirit?
Yeah, yeah. First thing I'll do is I'll lay out a circle around me, usually in flour or cornmeal. That's kind of tradition. And then light some incense. I'll get a lot of incense going in the room. There seems to be some kind of connection between having a spirit materialize and having a lot of incense burning. So as the incense is burning, I'll focus on the drawn symbol of the spirit, and begin either an oration or an incantation that'll bring it closer and closer to me. And what occurs while you're doing the conjurations and going through the steps of the ritual is what's often called a rapture, where your senses are elevated to such a degree that you almost feel like you're about to lose consciousness. You're just hinging on completely losing consciousness. And at that point, all of your senses completely elevate and are almost transfigured into spiritual senses. And at that point, the spirit will begin to materialize in the incense smoke before you.
And once that happens, here they come.
Yeah, yeah. And they is actually really an astute observation, because although you may be just calling one spirit, you're opening up a doorway, a gateway, and if you're observant throughout the evocation, you'll notice that there's not just one spirit, but there are often legions that come through and are materializing around you.
Do people generally try to call up a spirit of a dearly departed?
Yeah, they do, and that's more along the lines of necromancy. But really, you can use the same process as you would for calling any other spirit up. You would need different psychic links, like maybe an object that belonged to that person, or something to make some kind of psychic link where you won't have, you know, the symbol that you would use with another entity. But yeah, you can use the same technique to call up a deceased person.
Have you practiced witchcraft in the past?
Oh, definitely. You know, it's hard to really get into the occult without getting into the witchcraft part of it, where you're actually casting spells, where you're actually trying to manipulate both your environment and circumstances as well as other people.
Have you? You sound like a great guy, but have you ever used this to try to get at somebody?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
You have?
Yeah, most definitely. Actually, a few years ago, I wrote a book that's now out of print, Baneful Magic, which details specifically using magic, using the occult to harm other people. And yes, I've definitely done that. And I make no excuses for it in that book or at any other time, that I've definitely abused this power in that way. And really, the impetus for that, I think, was to see how far I could push the boundaries of my ability to harness this power.
Was it more of an experiment, or were you really out to hurt somebody?
More of a series of experiments. As I reflect back on it, more of a series of experiments. Because honestly, I can't say that that I've ever caused extreme harm to somebody who really, really deserved it. It was more just petty things that I used as excuses to test these powers.
And they work, don't they?
Most definitely.
Is it also true that when you send out, and I'll call it negative forces, that it also comes back and gets you maybe five times as bad as what you sent out?
You know, I really don't. I've not seen that in my life. And I think you've got the idea of karma, and that's really extremely misunderstood. The idea of karma, you know, comes from India and from the Vedas and Hinduism. And it was never intended as if you put negativity out into the universe that it returns. It was more speaking about your state of attachment. If you're attached to your deeds and you have this strong emotional attachment to it, that attachment itself is what's going to cause harm. So, if you allow yourself to become an evil person and become surrounded by and obsessed with things of darkness, yes, that's what you're going to reap. But you'll also see in the Bhagavad Gita, one of the main texts of Hinduism, that the main character in that is instructed by Krishna to go out and to slaughter his enemies, but to have no attachment to his actions, because it's the attachment itself that brings the negative consequences, not the action.
Our guest tonight, E.A. Coedine, author, of course, and we're talking, of course, about the supernatural, the spiritual, the occult. A couple of his books, Evoking Eternity, and how in the heck do you pronounce the other one?
That's Ipsissimus.
What does that mean?
That's Latin for master of the self or the greatest self, and that book is really focused at attaining godhood in every way possible in this life. And so it is literally becoming the master of the self.
As people begin to evoke spirits, how do you get them back?
I'm sorry, how do you get the spirits?
The spirits back. How do you get them back into the closet, basically?
Okay, yeah, that's a... part of the whole ritual of evocation is a dismissal. It ends with a dismissal where you simply command the spirit to return from whence it came, basically. Most of the time they're gonna leave without argument at that point. I have had a few occasions where I go through the dismissal and I say, okay, you're dismissed. And the spirit is still standing in front of me, and then I repeat it. Okay, you need to leave now, and it's still there. And at that point, you do have to go through several different exorcisms to get the spirit to leave.
At what point, EA, did you get to a feeling that evocation works, that you can conjure up spirits?
You know, I dabbled with it for several years where I would get that, like I said, a spooky feeling where I could feel that there was something in the room with me, where there were shifts in the environment that were noticeable. But it wasn't until I actually had what would be called a demonic king materialize in front of me that it really clicked as far as this is something that is very, very real.
All right, stay with us. We're going to be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. You know what we're talking about later on tonight. We'll take your questions and your stories on the occult. We'll be back. New Coast to Coast listener Paulette sent me an email today, and she said, George, exactly what is Coast Insiders? I've heard you talk about it, but tell me a little bit more. Well, you can go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, and click the little banner there for Coast Insiders, and you can figure out all about the things that we do. But basically what it is, it's a club, Coast Insiders Club. It's for less than 25 cents a day. It allows you to get special downloads, podcasting, and some special applications. And for example, tonight we had one of our chats where hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of you joined, firing away questions about me and the show and things like that. So that's what it is, a Coast Insider Club, and you can sign up for that by going to coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, our guest tonight, E.A. Coetting, as we talk about E.A.'s work in the occult. A couple works out there, of course, including Evoking Eternity. And you pronounce the other one for me, E.A.
Ipsissimus.
That's a great name. Great name. Why and how does evocation, conjuring up these spirits, why does that work?
Well, you know, what it actually is, and like I kind of mentioned before, is that you're elevating your senses to the point where you can interact with the world of spirituality, and in science they've actually been able to narrow this down to brainwave states. That if you're able to hold the theta state, which is basically the brainwave state that you'll reach right before hitting sleep, if you're able to hold that, then you start triggering gamma brainwaves, which are off the charts high frequency brainwaves. You're basically using more of your brain actively at one time than at any other point in your life when you're able to hold the theta state, trigger the gamma state. Your senses are fully immersed in the spiritual, in things that our normal senses just wouldn't be able to perceive. And then once you're in that state, you're basically putting out a beacon, a call to one specific spirit and calling it towards you. And the radiance that you're producing in the spiritual dimension at that point is so great, and the almost gravitational force that you're producing is so great that you are going to call that spirit to you, and then once again the shifts in the environment that are going to be caused by the ritual itself are going to facilitate the materialization of the spirit.
How do you know you're conjuring up a spirit or, you know, hallucinating or projecting something?
Well, yeah, and that's kind of a debate that's been going on in the occult for at least 100 years, probably longer, as far as, you know, are you taking parts of your psyche and projecting that into the air in front of you and causing a controlled hallucination? Well, From my experience, you're definitely not, because for one, you're looking at the verifiable results of what you're doing. So, if you call a spirit that has control over wealth, and you ask it for to deliver money to you, you'll have that money delivered in the exact amount, if not more, very quickly. So you've got the verifiable results that are produced through the ritual and through dealing with that spirit. You'll also have information that's given to you by the spirits that you really wouldn't otherwise be able to obtain. To the point where I've had in conversations with these spirits, I've had them use words that I've never heard in my life, both in English and in other languages, that I'll jot down on a notepad, look up later, and basically learn new words to add to my vocabulary just from these spirits. Things and then you know, like I said, knowledge and information that they give you as well that you really couldn't otherwise obtain. That is very real and verifiable.
EA, where are these spirits coming from?
Well, you know, they're basically coming from what occultists would call the astral plane. So it's basically a dimension of pure energy, and so when we link up with that astral plane, then they're going to come here and take on a form that's beholdable to us that we can identify with. The spirits in their natural state, I don't think would have arms and legs that look a lot like ours. That doesn't make much sense. But more that it's pure energy and consciousness, and so you're tapping into a very distinct external intelligence and consciousness that's able to take that form in front of you.
Is it a one-way road? I mean, can we go there?
Yes, and that's a big part of what Ipsissimus centers around, where evoking eternity is how to open these gateways and call spirits here. Ipsissimus really deals with how we can do the opposite, how we can travel through those gateways into the worlds of spirit and fully experience those as well.
Why would we want to do that?
Well, for mainly you would want to do that for self-knowledge. You're going to want to do that to learn more about who we are, because I think that just about everybody who has any kind of inclination towards spirituality can recognize that this physical body and this mind and all of that is just a shell or a projection of our greater selves. By getting into those spiritual states where our consciousness is really uninhibited by the body and its mechanisms, I think you really get to know who you are, what your true nature is, and even go as far as what your destiny in the greater scheme of things is.
The other side where these spirits come from. I mean, do they ever tell us what it's like, what they do over there?
As far as angels and demons and planetary spirits and such, they don't really seem to say much about, you know, you might get an idea that you've got these spirits that are sitting around you know, playing cards, waiting to be evoked by some magician out there, and I don't necessarily think that's the case. These are embodiments of consciousness that are energetic embodiments, whether they're not really restricted to a form, and so it seems to me that they are integrated fully into their environment and into the world, and they all have parts to play in things. If you look at elemental spirits, it would be the spirits of the elements of fire, water, earth, and air, that those specific spirits, that consciousness, would be fully integrated into the element that it belongs to.
Are you concerned at all about conjuring up these spirits, Eric, at all?
You know, I from time to time I get very concerned about I guess the consequences of calling them up and opening these gateways. It does alter your perception of things in an extreme way, where you can't really look at the physical world and in the same way anymore, and see that's all there is. And at the same time, the one of the greatest dangers in getting into specifically evocation and dealing with these spirits is that you are bringing them into such close contact with your psychic being that it's really easy to start taking on some of their attributes. So somebody who's working with the demonic entities is going to find themselves becoming more demonic, more hateful, more of an evil person, just naturally by their association. And so I think that's something I feel I have to always be conscious of is basically what kind of energy and consciousness I'm surrounding myself with.
Are you convinced, because of your belief of the spirits, that there is life after death?
Less because of evocation, and more because of my travels into that other side, where I don't really have a belief in the afterlife. I have a knowledge of it because I've gone there.
Tell me what it's like on the other side.
You know, there are various layers of what that would be like, where you can enter into an energetic form or what's often called an astral body of light, where you look very much similar to yourself, only you're a being of light rather than a being of flesh, and it can go all the way to being fully immersed in what I call the eternal source of all things, which would be omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient, where you become that, where your consciousness and your identity completely expands infinitely.
Is there a heaven? Is there a hell?
There is, but not as a final destination for the human soul. Heaven and hell would basically be constructs in the astral plane that you can visit through astral travel, but not as the final destination. No.
A lot of people who are very religious, very spiritual, would say that you are dabbling on the dark side. You are dabbling with too much evil, perhaps even the devil. What do you tell them?
They're not wrong. I definitely am. But as far as the extreme duality of good versus evil and Jesus versus Satan, that's not really a concept that I resonate with, or that in my experience I've seen to be real at all. Definitely getting in contact with things that are forbidden for sure.
Would you say that you dabble with the dark more than the light?
I think the only issue I'd have with that is dabble, because at this point I'm fully immersing myself in it. The dabbling period is
over.
Yeah. I'm beyond the dabbling, but I'm fully immersing myself in things, and I do get more into the dark aspect of things than I do the light, for sure.
Why do you do that? And by the way, I'm not judgmental on you. I mean, some of the questions I may ask you tonight may seem like I'm coming at you, but I'm not. I just want to know why you do what you do.
I have listened to you for long enough that I know. I understand that.
Okay, very good.
But there are certain forbidden knowledges and secret understandings that I think can only be revealed by going more towards the dark side of things. And when I say dark, I don't necessarily mean the malevolent and the hateful and the pure evil, but the forbidden, which does look very demonic and from a Judeo-Christian standpoint, for sure. But it is definitely a darker aspect of it, and you could even I relate it a lot to a Saturnian aspect of the planet Saturn, where things are hidden, and it's that hidden knowledge that really is an obsession for me of getting to kind of pry open those vaults of knowledge that possibly humans maybe shouldn't have, but that's the knowledge that I definitely want.
You know, we have free will, so you perfectly have the right to dabble with, you know, angelic realms and the good, but you've elected to go into the dark primarily. Is it more exciting for you? What is it?
You know, there is that aspect that there is an excitement to dealing with the darkness. There's an eroticism to it for sure, but beyond that, it is for the knowledge that's delivered more readily. If you evoke an angel and ask it to tell you certain secrets of self empowerment, it could very well withhold that just for your own good. Whereas if you call on a demon, they're more than happy to damn you with as much knowledge as they can throw at you. So for somebody like me who's seeking after as much knowledge as I can get on the subject of spirituality, I'm gonna want to basically pry that open, and the demonic and the dark is more readily available in that way.
This community that's out there, those that dabble, are they dabbling primarily in the dark on that side?
You know, it seems to be pretty split, because you do have uh, You do have Wicca and you have paganism, which is out there, which is really light. It's really earth-based and benevolent for the most part, and that's what you'll see most people getting into and getting interested in. I think from what I've seen, not too many people get very deep into the more left-hand path, the darker path. I'll see a lot of people that are really interested in it, and then they start using it. It starts working, and then they run for the hills.
They get scared, don't they?
Yeah, rightfully so. There's this is some scary stuff, some dangerous stuff, and a lot of people get the taste of that and run. But there are a lot of people, I think, that toy with the idea of the darkness and like to kind of take on that image. It's kind of a countercultural excitement to do that. But when it gets into actually applying it in a spiritual, practical way, that's when things start to change.
Does this community that plays with the dark side, do they socialize with each other? I mean, is it something where they meet together as a group? Or are they all individuals when it comes to this?
Well, you know, both. You do have there are a lot of groups out there, and a growing number of groups who do gather to perform black magic, to do group evocations, and to learn from each other. And I've seen that on the rise massively in the last decade, where there are groups popping up left and right, especially throughout Europe, that are specifically focused on the left-hand path. But then you do have a lot that just that are solitary, that learn it themselves and do it themselves.
Do some of these members also play around with vampirism and things like that?
You know, there is a bit of that. We saw that, I think, in the 80s and 90s. There was a trend towards vampirism, and now it's gotten less into what would be called sanguinary vampirism, which would be vampirism of the blood itself, and more into psychic vampirism, where you're feeding off the energy of others, where you're reaching into others and taking. Taking their subtle energies into yourself.
Do some of these spirits tell you about worldly events?
You know, they do. They do not in a way that would make me any kind of predictor of world events, but. When I'll get concerned a lot, because I do look at what's going on in the world, and it is frightening or concerning at the very least, and I'll ask the spirits about it, and I'll ask my sources about what's happening and what's going on, and it's hard to get a straight answer about what's coming up in the future, and that concerns me even more.
Why would they not want to tell you?
You know, I'm not sure. The one thing that I've gotten about what's to come, as we're looking, we can see a very rapid progression towards some sort of climax, and that I feel is going to be coming very soon. And I've been told that things are going to change in the world in a very dramatic way. But I haven't been told the specifics. The only thing I have been told, and this is kind of cryptic, is to pay attention to the skies.
To the skies. Well, hold that thought. Let's talk about that when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.